It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In 1965, Linda Elston was a student at Mount Mercy College, now Carlo University. She was asked to come to Alabama to take part in civil rights marches. She agreed, and what followed was a life-changing experience. Today, Linda Wolfson is a retired biology teacher, still interested in social justice. She joins us by phone from South Bend, Indiana, with recollections of the Alabama civil rights protests. Linda Wolfson, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Talk about the atmosphere in the United States at the time that all this was going on. There were film clips on the newscasts at night showing the violence that was happening in Alabama as civil rights marchers battled the authorities down south. Were you scared about going to Alabama?
I don't think I was scared. I understood that there was danger. Of course, there was apprehension. But remember, I was young, and I was very much a part of the local activities at our college about civil rights, and so it seemed to me to be something that I would do. And so I don't remember being frightened of the decision to go.
Now, of course, the summer before was the Freedom Summer, and that was
right.
When some young civil rights workers were disappeared, and eventually it turned out
right.
That they had been murdered.
Right. And we were very aware of that in Pittsburgh. There was an organization at the time called Friends of COFO. COFO was the group of organizations that working in the South that summer. And it was the Friends of COFO group in Pittsburgh that actually raised the money to get the car to send down to replace the one that was destroyed when Goodman and Cheney and Schwerner were murdered. So we were aware of that activity. And also the year of Freedom Summer, I had met some of the civil rights activists at a student convention, which happened also to be in Indiana that year. And so we were familiar with some of the activities that had already occurred and the violence that had occurred in the South.
And there wasn't anybody telling you, gee, Linda, this might not be the best idea. It's admirable, but not something that we feel comfortable with you doing.
Nope. I called my mother because each one of us had to have permission to go on the trip. This was in 1965 at Mount Mercy. And we still had what was known then as in loco parentis. So to be part of that, of the march in the South, we had to have one of our parents call the convent and tell one of the nuns, whose names I no longer remember, that it was okay to go. And when I called my mother, I didn't ask permission. I actually said, Mom, call her and tell her I can go, and she did. Although my mother was protective of me, she also was very respectful of my opinions and my actions.
Why was it so important for you to make that trip?
Because it was a way I could act upon something that I believed, even by then, I believed it very deeply. And I received a phone call, in fact, from one of the priests from Mount Mercy, who had been on earlier demonstrations. He probably was on the one that was turned back on the bridge at Selma, the one after Bloody Sunday. And he had explained over the phone some of the things that were happening there. I don't remember all of the particulars of the conversation. I would imagine that he told me about Reverend Reed being killed. And he didn't encourage me to go. He told me there were buses leaving, and would I let people know, and so I did.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Linda Wolfson, who is a retired biology teacher. Linda, what activities were you involved with in Pittsburgh as a student that led to your traveling to Alabama?
We had at Mount Mercy College in the 1963-64 school year, I believe, is when it started, we formed a chapter of the Catholic Interracial Council on campus and had also contact with an organization that met in the Hill District every Friday night called the United Negro Protest Committee. That year at Thanksgiving time, people from the UNPC, as we called it, came to campus, and we had what we called a Thanksgiving fast for freedom. And what that meant is that we gave up our dinner that evening, and instead the school agreed to donate that money to the UNPC. And we spent the dinner hour visiting with people who were active within the Pittsburgh area. After that, a number of students, exactly which ones varied from week to week, but we started attending meetings of the UNPC in the Hill District on a little storefront in Center Avenue. And that organization was particularly focused on the issue of job discrimination. And sometimes there would be picket lines or there would be educational issues. One in particular that I remember quite well was the attempt to have the three department stores in Pittsburgh hire black people for more than janitors at night when there weren't any customers there. That was the practice. The leaders from UNPC met with each of the department stores. One of the department stores decided that they agreed that it was as bad, they would try and improve. The other two did not. So during the Christmas season, we had daily picket lines around those stores, and in fact, they capitulated, and it changed the employment patterns in the department stores in Pittsburgh. And there were a number of the students from Mount Mercy that participated in that, and we learned a lot from that experience as well. It wasn't always well received from the people who were walking the streets, but it was a long process of understanding more and talking about it and meeting people. And so by the time Father Carroll called and said the demonstration was in the South, there was an openness and a certain level of understanding. I think that some people really weren't totally aware of how violent it might become or what the conditions would be, but others knew more. It was variation among the students who attended.
You took part in a march on the Capitol. How violent did it become? What exactly happened when you did this?
Well, it was a long time ago, and of course I don't remember a lot of the details, but what I do remember is we had spent the night in a small church overnight, and the next morning we began a march for the Capitol and got several blocks away when I don't know what branch of law enforcement it was, but I do remember that it was horses and officers on horses with clubs, and they attempted to disperse people, or they did disperse people very brutally. I wasn't hurt. There were a couple girls from Mount Mercy who were hurt, and certainly the leaders of the march were brutally hurt, and they dispersed us back to the church, which was in the black community where we had been. And while we were standing there and, kind of milling around in front of the church, I also observed one of the officers on a motorcycle just violently ram into a demonstrator in the middle of the street. It was quite on purpose. There was no provocation of any kind that I observed. So we spent the day in that way, and then in the evening there was a rally where Dr. King and other leaders spoke, and partway through the rally, the bus came, and we got back on the bus and went back to Pittsburgh.
With the release of the movie Selma, first of all, have you seen the movie?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it twice now.
What kind of memories does that bring back for you?
It was difficult to watch. It was hard to watch, but I don't know how else to describe it. It was hard to watch, but it was extremely important that I do that. And in fact, the second time we went back, we took some young people from the South Bend area who really had never had an opportunity to learn much about what had happened during the Civil Rights Movement. These are young guys. Some were still in high school, some just out of high school. And that was a very useful thing, too, to see how they responded to it. And what they wanted is a freedom school. They wanted to learn more.
We've been talking with Linda Wolfson. She's a retired biology teacher who was a student at Mount Mercy College, now Carlo University, in 1965 when she traveled to Alabama to take part in civil rights marches there. Linda Wolfson, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and to share your memories with us.
Thank you for asking. I do appreciate being asked. Sometimes you think you do things in your life and nobody knows.
Well, now the rest of Pittsburgh will know.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Coming up on Essential Pittsburgh, a conversation with actor Stan Houston, who played Selma Sheriff Jim Clark in the movie Selma. That's next, as Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Coming up, an interview with actor Stan Houston, who plays Sheriff Jim Clark in the movie Selma. But first, the National Aviary has launched an online auction to name one of its newest African penguin chicks. National Aviary Managing Director Cheryl Tracy is here with us in Studio A. Cheryl Tracy, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
And also Chris Goss, who is Senior Aviculturalist for the Penguin Point exhibit. Explain how this project will benefit not only the aviary, but the future of the species. First of all, great to have you here, Chris. And this is an interesting idea. It is an unusual idea. So, Cheryl, tell us how this came about.
Well, people really fell in love watching our penguin chicks hatch and grow via our penguin nest cam. And we thought, what a better way to raise awareness for this critically endangered species at the National Aviary and what our role is in protecting them.
And so, there are a number of ways you could have done this. So what led you to end up settling on this?
Well, we definitely like to name our birds at the National Aviary. And we do that because we want people to make a connection with them. We realize that they're wild animals. They're not pets. But we want people to really have an attachment. Our mission is to inspire respect for nature through an appreciation of birds. And this is just one way we do it. Now, we name our birds in a number of different ways. Sometimes our staff name the birds. We've had contests where we have the public name them. But with all the attention that our African penguins got through our nest cam, we thought, what a better way to do an auction. And the money that we raise through this auction really helps the National Aviary. We rely on our donors. And it helps us to further our conservation and breeding programs. The African penguin is an endangered species. And the National Aviary participates in protecting them and helping to sustain that population for future generations.
Chris Goss, talk about the African penguin and what makes it different from the penguins that we normally associate with the Antarctic.
Well, usually the species that a lot of people think of when they think of penguins is the emperor, which is one of two species that can be found in Antarctica year-round. Of the 18 different kinds of penguin, most of them actually prefer a warm or temperate species. Warmer temperate climate, excuse me. There are actually species on both coasts of South America, Australia, New Zealand, and the species that we have at the National Aviary is the African penguin, which the climate is very similar to what we have here in Pittsburgh.
It is.
So
they don't have to worry about adapting, obviously.
Not really, and all of our penguins have been raised in zoos and aquariums, so they're very used to moving in and out of climates, also in and out of outdoors. It doesn't take much for them to adapt.
And when you look at the future of this species, what are the challenges that it faces?
Unfortunately, as Cheryl mentioned, this is a critically endangered species. One of the biggest challenges, human impacts, things we are causing. Pollution, dwindling food supplies, encroachment into natural nesting areas. At their current decline rate, it's believed the species could actually be extinct in the wild in the next 10 to 15 years. And that's why programs like our breeding program, which is called a species survival plan, is so important so we can maintain the species within zoos and aquariums and eventually be able to kind of rebuild or bolster their natural populations.
And what did we establish exactly what part of Africa these penguins
they're found,
are from?
Sorry, they're naturally found in the southern and southwestern coasts of Africa. So the countries South Africa, and there are some colonies in Namibia as well.
And so, you mentioned that the climate is similar to what we have here. So, are they experiencing cold at this time of year?
They are. They actually do prefer our summer months. That's a little bit more of what they would see naturally. Our winters often will get a little bit colder than what they would see, but we do have things installed in the exhibit, heating lines to melt ice and snow, overhead heaters to give the penguins a little bit of a warm spot to go to, and they also have caves within the exhibit that they can go into and kind of get out of the elements a little bit.
And you've got people gawking at them, how do they react to that? Do they play to the audience at all?
Some of them seem to. A lot of our penguins were hand-raised from a young age as well, so they are used to being around people, interacting with people as well. The two chicks we've had hatch, the one that we're doing the naming auction for, are actually the fifth and sixth chicks that we've had hatch at the National Aviary. And all of those six chicks seem to be really into and interactive with people. We do a lot of programming that people get up close and personal with the species, with the animals, and they really seem to enjoy that kind of interaction.
How unusual is it for these types of species to be born in captivity?
Not unusual at all. As I
really?
Mentioned, yeah, not unusual at all. I mentioned the Species Survival Plan. We are one of, I think, around 50 facilities that participate in just the African Penguin Species Survival Plan. And they breed extremely well in zoos and aquariums. And then there are species survival plans for all kinds of other species, especially those critically endangered species. So some of the other birds that we have at the aviary that are part of a species survival plan are rhinoceros hornbills or guam rails, which we've actually sent a number of our guam rails to be reintroduced into the wild as well. So that's a big part of our conservation program. And as Cheryl mentioned, this auction that we're doing for the naming rights is going to help support programs like that.
So, Cheryl, let's talk about if people want to get in on this and they want to, hey, I'd like to name a penguin, how do they get involved or how can they participate?
So it's a public eBay auction. At last check, the bidding stood at $1,825, and the bid increments are $25. Now, the auction will close at noon tomorrow, and there are a number of people watching the auction, so we expect things will get pretty interesting in the next 24 hours. But to find the auction, you can go to our website, www.aviary.org, and you can follow the link to the press release, which will then follow the link to the eBay website.
If you could name the penguins, what would you choose?
Oh.
Have you thought about it?
Well, the brother to the penguin that we're naming is named Happy, so I might want to go with something that kind of goes along those lines.
Well, you could have, like, if you had a couple others, you could have Happy, Go, and Lucky.
We could.
Happy, Go, Lucky. Chris, one final question for you. Is there anything you have to do to help these little babies along? Can the mothers just kind of take it from there, or are there things that someone like you with your expertise might want to jump in and help out with?
Well, normally we like to try and have the parents do as much of the raising as possible. So that actually occurred with all of the hatchings that we had for African penguins, is the parents actually did the raising for the first 21 days or so. At 21 days old, the chicks are big enough and strong enough that they can regulate their own body temperature. We feel comfortable taking them out of the exhibit and starting the hand-raising process from there. And doing this allows, again, the penguins to get comfortable with the staff and also learning how to hand-feed from us. At that point, like I said, they're pretty comfortable with us. They're pretty good about learning on their own. But the parents do help out, obviously, at the very beginning, too.
When it comes to the penguins' conservation plan, what kind of environment do they get released into?
Well, right now, unfortunately, we're not anywhere close to be able to consider releasing African penguins into the wild because of those human impacts I mentioned earlier. They still exist, and their populations are still declining at such a rapid rate. Ideally, you want to see, obviously, some corrective actions being taken place to ensure that any penguins that are released into the wild are able to survive out there on their own. This species naturally lives on kind of rocky, sandy beaches. They swim and fish in cold water currents. So that's kind of what they would be seeing naturally in the wild when they get released.
Well, it's a fascinating endeavor and something that people can look forward to at the National Aviary. We've been talking with National Aviary Managing Director Cheryl Tracy and also Chris Goss, Senior Aviculturist for the Penguin Point exhibit, explaining how this project is taking place, the aspects that impact the future of the species, and the online auction to name one of the newest African penguin chicks. So good luck, and thank you so much for stopping by to share your knowledge with us here on Essential Pittsburgh today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up, we will talk with actor Stan Houston, who portrays Sheriff Jim Clark in the movie Selma. That's next here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. to Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In any movie that makes a statement about injustice, there has to be a skilled actor who brings to life the character that embodies the evil the forces of good are fighting against. In To Kill a Mockingbird, it was James Anderson as Mayella Yule's father. In Schindler's List, it was Ray Fiennes as Nazi Eamon Goeth. And in the critically acclaimed movie Selma, which is still playing in local theaters, it is Stan Houston who plays the sadistic, racist sheriff Jim Clark. It was the tactics of Sheriff Clark that played a large part in preventing African-American citizens from exercising their rights to vote in Dallas County, Alabama. And he was one of the officials responsible for the violent arrests of civil rights protesters during the 1965 Selma to Montgomery marches, the first of which was on March 7th, 50 years ago Saturday. It is known as Bloody Sunday. We have a newsreel clip of Sheriff Clark trying to block African-American citizens from entering the county courthouse to register to vote. Let's listen to some interaction involving the real-life Sheriff Jim Clark.
Some 70 would-be Negro voters went to the courthouse to see the Board of Registrars concerning a new federal court order on voter registration. Sheriff Jim Clark barred the way and jostled C.T. Vivian, one of Dr. Martin Luther King's assistants. Then he read a state court order banning demonstrations at the courthouse.
And do you mean by this document, Sheriff, that you're saying that you break Judge Thomas's order?
What is your name?
My name is C.T. Vivian.
Where is your home?
I am a member of the Dallas County Voters League.
How long have you been in Dallas County?
I have not lived in Dallas County, but everyone here has. And do we agree that he is stopping us? Isn't Sheriff Clark stopping you from registering to vote? All right, now, let us look at this. Do you live in Dallas County?
Yes!
Do you live in Dallas County?
This does not matter, Sheriff. You're stopping all these people.
Well,
step forward and ask
them.
All 70 were marched into the courthouse under arrest.
And that clip includes the sound of the real Sheriff Jim Clark. And I'm joined now in Studio A by Stan Houston, the actor who portrays Sheriff Jim Clark in the movie Selma. He is in Pittsburgh speaking to students today at the Neighborhood Academy, an 8th through 12th grade school for low-income families. With us now in Studio A, Stan Houston. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I had to bring the sleigh out to get here.
Yeah, you had a whirlwind drive down here from the school. You picked a good day to come to Pittsburgh if you like snow.
Yeah, I don't like snow. Y'all can keep it.
Well, we appreciate you braving the elements to get to the city and to get to our studios. We just played that clip, and we get a feel for what Sheriff Clark is like. You played him amazingly well, and I'm wondering, after watching your portrayal, if you were at all reluctant about auditioning for that particular role.
I was. I actually turned down the audition twice.
You turned it down?
Turned it down.
Why?
Hugh Jackman was originally cast to play Sheriff Clark. And then, of course, I already thought it was cast, so I assumed someone in L.A. had already booked it. But I actually live in the town where Sheriff Jim Clark was born and raised.
You lived there?
I lived there. It's called Elba, Alabama. And before I started acting, I bought a house there, so we just stayed there. But my next-door neighbor's his third cousin. They haven't spoke to me since July. But that wasn't the only reason I turned it down. It's just a dark place I didn't want to go. Granted, I grew up in the South, but we didn't grow up in racism, as you would assume. Being Southern, you're racist, and white, you're racist. But I never grew up like that. And I just didn't want to go to that dark place. And he was a bad man. I've saw some uncut footage of Sheriff Clark that never made it to air because it was too violent. And he was later interviewed about a year before he died and regretted nothing that he had done. Said he'd do it all again the same way. So I knew some of his family, his friends, but eventually my agent, Joy Purvis, talked me into auditioning for Ava, and I did it and eventually got the role.
How much did your knowledge, you know, having spent time in Alabama as you did, how much did that inform your preparation for this character?
Well, growing up in the South, everybody's met the guy. There's one of them out there. A good buddy of mine, Clay Chappell, who plays the registrar in Selma. Clay knows that guy. you know, not specifically, but we know the personality, the attitudes that we grew up in the South. We have a long way to go in race relations still in the South. We've come a long way. But the joke of it is, if there's a joke to it, the mannerisms I use, I portray my old high school football coach. But the frustration.
Tough guy he was.
Yeah. But the frustration of it is, I tried to turn it around. If Jimmie Lee Jackson had the baton in his hand and he was able to do to Clark what he was doing to Jimmie Lee in the scene, carry out those, reverse the roles, in other words, carry out his frustrations of being discriminated against, denied the right to vote just because of the color of his skin. So I used that as a motivation.
And they asked if you could ride a horse, because Sheriff Clark does. I mean, these guys are, they're mounted patrolmen who meet the protesters on the famous Pettus Bridge scene in Selma that in real life and in the movie, as it's portrayed, results in what's called Bloody Sunday, because mm-hmm. these people, they're nonviolently protesting, but they're responded to with violence. So had you been on a horse? Were you comfortable doing this on camera?
My agent called me. She goes, I think you're in, but let me ask you this question. Can you ride a horse? Well, what are you going to tell her? No. Of course. Yeah, I can ride a horse, but I haven't been on a horse in 30 years. So she said, I'll call you back in like 30 minutes, and I would call my dad and see if he knew of anybody that had a horse farm or something. Well, he set me up. I went and took some lessons, so I wouldn't look like a complete idiot. But, yeah, I had to take a few lessons.
Well, no one would have known. No one would have been the wiser watching the movie. I understand that you didn't try your hand at acting until about 6 or 7 years ago.
That's correct.
What made you want to try it?
Just a fluke. My daughter and I took an acting class together. Free acting class was being offered. And the guy that was teaching the class got us cast into an independent movie they were making in my hometown. And one of the actors was the bad sensei and karate kid, Martin Cove. And he asked me how long I'd been acting, and I told him about 15 minutes. And he put me in touch with my agent now, who I have now. And I went Red Force, he signed me. So that's how I got started.
So you end up landing this pivotal role as a racist sheriff in a very important movie. Were you at all self-conscious about some of the things that you had to do and say?
Oh, yeah, tremendous, especially the N-word. And one of the geniuses of Ava DuVernay, who's the director, she loves surprises. So for 3 days, when Oprah and I are filming our scenes together in front of the courthouse, I never said the N-word. They knew Sheriff Clark was going to say it, but they didn't know when. So the last day, I'm thinking, I'm going through it, and I don't have to say it. Ava whispers in my ear. She goes, I want you to say, get that woman. I'm like, I can't do it. It's Oprah. You know, I can't say the word, much less say it to Oprah. She goes, I want you to do it. So once I did it, you see this actual surprise of the cast and the background actors when I actually say it. So there was a lot of reluctance on that part.
And, you know, Oprah Winfrey plays Annie Lee Cooper, who mm-hmm. hits Sheriff Clark, and you end up having to beat her up
yeah.
in one of your scenes. So describe working through that. You know, you have to beat up Oprah Winfrey.
Fortunately, they cut that scene, but she beat me up.
Well, we saw how she yeah. hits you.
That is not a stage slap. That I saw stars every time Oprah packs a punch. So
you didn't fake it?
Oh, no. She cold cocks me. And really no sound effects there. That's her actually hitting me in the back of the head. I mean, I had knots and, you know, saw stars, actually. But I'd never really actually hit her. Ava uses a fall cam to get that effect of her falling to the ground. The scene was me to go over and club her after, you know, which Clark did in real life. But fortunately, I didn't have to hit Oprah.
That's probably a good thing, but it certainly looks realistic. And
yeah.
I'm sure when you saw it, you know, the effect is very...
It'll give you chills, yeah.
Sheriff Clark is, you know, we talked about earlier, is this character who, you know, who knows exactly what motivates him other than, you know, it's this ingrained way of life that some people firmly believed in the South about African-Americans, for whatever reason, perceiving them as an inferior race, which enables them to do the horrible things that they do. I mentioned at the introduction about how important it is to have that actor who's willing to be that guy, that evil, evil guy, like James Anderson, who portrays Mayella Yule's father in To Kill a Mockingbird. Now, apparently, he was a method actor. Did you use any method acting techniques to kind of go to the dark places? And were you staying in character between takes? What was that like?
I mean, you had to make it real and be perceived on come off screen being perceived as real. But as soon as they said cut, I was out of character because if I stayed in that dark place, I mean, I would have gone nuts. But what really motivated me, I was not 100% committed until we started rehearsing the scenes. And I saw the reaction to my character from the other actors, which they were crying. And I get emotional now thinking about it. But it reinforced what I really had to do. I had to represent and tell this guy's story to tell the broad picture of what these people went through. And basically, as a family, we're still family. The cast, we still talk, you know, once, twice a week. We gathered in a circle and had a word of prayer, and they were praying for me. Changed my life. And I was dedicated 110% to portraying this guy.
And they're praying for you for?
To give me strength. Because I was apprehensive. I mean, you could see it. I broke down. And Ava came and gave me encouraging words, but the cast saw how playing this guy was bothering me. And they just prayed God to uplift me and portray the character the way he needed to be portrayed, and he did.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is actor Stan Houston, who plays Sheriff Jim Clark in the movie Selma. If you would like to join our conversation, 412-246-2002, the number to call, 412-246-2002. We're live on the South Side, snow or no snow. We've got this show on the air today, and you may be home snowbound and listening, and so you can enjoy the show and listen or join in at 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. You were talking about the cast and how it was like a family to be a part of it. Talk about this group, this ensemble cast that you were a part of and all of the talent that you were working with.
Just amazing. David Oyelowo is probably the most talented actor I've ever worked with, and I've worked with
Colin. He plays Martin Luther King.
Martin Luther King. I've worked with Colin Firth, Reese Witherspoon, Stephen Moyer, Mary Steenburgen. They're all excellent actors. But David, talking about going into character so quickly, I mean, he gained weight for this role. He cut his hairline, and he even spoke off camera as Dr. King, so he never lost character because he's from England. He's from the UK, so he has an English accent. Never heard it when we were off camera. He was King. And then seeing Carmen, she looks like Coretta Scott King. She talks like him. She moves. Her mannerisms are like Coretta. And the entire cast, Wendell Pierce, who's from The Wire, Treme, he's also a new show called The Odd Couple. Amazing actor. And just being able to be in the presence of these guys and be on common ground and being included with them was just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
And the movie has been extremely well-received. There are those who are unhappy that it didn't receive more love from the – and you're raising your hand – more Oscar love. What is your feeling about that?
Well, you know, we did get nominated for Best Picture. It was just such a – mixture of great quality film that was out there, and we just happened to come along that year. And then again, there was some politics involved, I think, when they talked about the accuracy, the historical accuracy of the film. I think it's based on your own perception. But we did win Best Song with John and Common's song, and just to be included, and they excuse me. But they even mentioned me in the top 25 for Best Supporting, which is an honor just to even be mentioned. So that's the way I look at it. So,
now, you had a chance to speak today at the Neighborhood Academy with students there. A lot of schools are closed today, but this one did not, probably because you're in town.
They did. We ended up missing the students, but we did have an opportunity with area representatives, and we just had a roundtable discussion. And we're coming back. And we're going to be able to speak to the students, and hopefully it don't snow or have a monsoon next time I come. But we were able to open up some doors for conversation. And race relations, to me, if you see Selma, people are changed. But it starts at conversation. It's all about communication. And if we can start things happening just from me coming to Pittsburgh, talking to some very fortunate students who are able to go to this great school that offers opportunities to them that they normally wouldn't have, then I'll be glad to come back.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation with our guest, actor Stan Houston, who portrays Sheriff Jim Clark in the movie Selma. We have Cynthia on the line, and she's calling from Georgia, and I think it's Alpharetta, Georgia. Cynthia, did I say that right?
Yes, you did. How are you?
I'm well. Say hi to Stan.
Hi, Stan. I'm enjoying the interview. I had the opportunity to meet you and your wonderful wife, and I loved you in the movie. And you're also a very good actor, so please talk about the other roles you have played, and we hope to see you more. But I also want to talk about the role of that Oprah played in her connection to Pittsburgh. Her Mrs. Cooper's son lived in the Hill District. I don't know if you are aware of that.
Yeah, someone told me that.
Yes, but please, Stan, talk about your other movie roles, and we look forward to seeing you in other things. And thank you so much for the interview.
Thank you for calling from home.
Thank you, Cynthia.
No, I've just finished South of Hell, which is a new Gothic series on WE. It's WE TV's first stab at a drama. It stars Mina Suvari from American Beauty. I play Jeb Roberts, who's like the power broker of Charleston. And that's coming out later on this year. Previously, I did Devil's Knot with Reese Witherspoon, Colin Firth. It's concerning the West Memphis 3 murders back in the early 90s. I play Detective Donald Bray in that. I've been on HBO, Eastbound and Down, Fox, several other. Look at IMDb if you want to know what I did. But we have some stuff coming up, but due to pre-production rules and legalities, I can't mention, but hopefully it's going to be a busy year.
Do you worry about getting typecast? You know, after you play a character like Jim Clark and, you know, it's something that makes such a strong impression on people's minds, do you worry about getting a chance to do something different from that?
No. If you got a checkbook, I'll work.
Okay.
Typecast me. Just cast me. That's what it is.
We were talking about the talk that you were going to have with the kids at the Neighborhood Academy, which unfortunately, because of the weather, we now understand did not happen. But this is obviously a movie that many educators feel is important for students to see. And there's been an effort on the part of groups in Pittsburgh to make sure that Pittsburgh Public School students see this movie. One of our reporters, Erica Barris, caught up with Pittsburgh Public School students on a recent outing to see Selma. Here are some of their reactions to the movie, Stan.
I thought the movie was an awesome portrayal of how Martin Luther King impacted our history as African American people. I only knew a little bit from schoolwork and history, but I learned a lot more about what happened actually, like with conversations between the people who actually led the movement.
When all the the white people came to help at Salem, the march, I didn't know that happened. Like, so many people joined together to come help.
Well, I knew that, you know, they were marching and stuff, that a lot of people got hurt, but the way the troops beat the black people and the old people and the young people and some of the children that were there.
And what about that was surprising?
That they didn't care.
That they didn't care. And that's one of the students that Erica Barris spoke to, Pittsburgh Public School students who were coming out of a recent showing of the movie Selma. When you hear that comment, and I'm looking in your eyes, Stan, and there are tears in Stan Houston's eyes that I can plainly see as he sits across from me after having heard those comments. When you heard that last one in particular, you know, what I understood, you know, this young lady saying, I understood that they didn't care. That should tell you did a pretty good job.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's phenomenal that our young people remember what these great patriots did for them for the simple right to vote. this simple right to be included as American citizens. And I think all of us take for granted what these guys did for us. They did it for all of us, not just one race, because our rights can be taken away with the stroke of a pen. These people died for it. And I'm glad to see it having a positive reaction, on especially the youth. They need to remember.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation with actor Stan Houston from the movie Selma. You can reach us at ESSPGH at WESA.FM, ESSPGH at WESA.FM, our email address, and on Twitter at ESSPGH. I was mentioning earlier that on Saturday, March 7th, it's the 50th anniversary of that first march. Mm-hmm. And that was Bloody Sunday. It's 50 years later. So much is in the news that relates, that directly correlates to what happened in Alabama. And when you read the Department of Justice's report from their investigation into how the Ferguson police force is dealing with minority citizens there, African-American citizens there, you know, what is there to make of how far we've come and how far we have to go?
I think we need to be real careful for one thing. I mean, people need to quit stereotyping. You know, you hear me talk eventually, you know, everybody, he's a redneck from the South. He's probably a racist, probably has a pickup truck, you know, whatever. See, a black guy in a Mercedes, a cop, a lot of them in situations, and this is what I get emotional talking about this. A good friend of mine who is a very accomplished actor, been in acting for 30 years, African-American, drives a nice Mercedes. He's in a rural area in Louisiana. He gets pulled over with his brother-in-law and his two nephews in the back, and he's having to explain to his nephews what to do, what position to have your hands on the steering wheel. Tell the officer you're reaching for your insurance card. Tell him you're reaching, instructing them because they're black. Because they're being pulled over. And it's a shame that African-American men are having to teach their sons just a simple pulling over for a taillight being out so you won't get killed. And on the other side, we have to be careful not to villainize the guys that are protecting us, and that's our police officers. You don't know what they're dealing with at home. They're being underpaid. They basically work for minimum wage if you keep their hours. So they're under that stress financially. There's probably some marital stress at home because they're never at home. So all this stress he's going through, not making enough money, you're sending out a loaded gun on the street. So if somebody gets him some lip or somebody gives him some kind of frustration, guess who he's going to take the frustration out on? You. And that's another thing we need to look at. I think our police officers need to be better trained for diversity. They need to be better paid for what they do for us, and that's protecting us all.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Eddie in Pittsburgh. Eddie, you're on with actor Stan Houston.
Hello.
Hi, Eddie. You're on the air.
I just wanted to say to Mr. Houston, I saw the movie. I've been to the movie three times. I studied segregation law at the University of Tampa in the mid-70s, so I was very aware of how Southern sheriffs acted, behaved, and Jim Clark was among the worst, and you were right. A year before he died, he openly said that he'd do it all over again without even a second thought. But what I wanted to bring up was Dr. Martin Luther King reiterated that the worst three experiences he had in all his dealings in the South were, number one, Selma, Alabama. Number two, and I wanted to bring this up because you have studied the character witness of Jim Clark as a sheriff, but another sheriff who was among the worst was Lawrence Rainey. Hmm. Lawrence Rainey commanded Neshoba County, Mississippi. He was responsible for the deaths of the three civil rights workers back in June of 64. And just for you and for the Pittsburgh public and whoever's listening to this online, look up and study Jim Clark, but remember the name Lawrence Rainey from Neshoba County, Mississippi.
Yeah, he ended up serving time.
He was the worst of the worst.
Didn't he serve some time?
Anyways, you did a great job in your acting, sir. Continued good luck to you and all your future roles in that, and thank you for coming to Pittsburgh and sharing your conversation with us.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thanks, Eddie. Thank you for the phone call. 412-246-2002. We have time left to take one or two more calls with Stan Houston. We also heard from Sister Patricia McCann, someone we had invited to be on the program and unfortunately was not able to be with us to take part in our broader conversation today. She accompanied students from Carlo University, then Mount Mercy, to join Selma, Selma to Montgomery March for voting rights. And she witnessed some horrible things, and she remarked to us that the film seemed very authentic to her. How gratifying is that to hear, especially in light of some criticism about historical accuracy, that in the sense of just capturing the visceral elements of what was at play 50 years ago, that the film got it right.
Right. That's the genius of Ava. She loves authenticity, I guess you'd say, but just certain things like when I'm shooting that gun on top of the horse, that's a 357 Magnum with a full load. Because she wants that reaction. And it looks like a newsreel. If you watch the movie, it does look like a newsreel. And she, even our dialogue was accurate to what was heard on some of the ABC news coverage of Bloody Sunday. But being able to do that in 105-degree weather, and we're supposed to pretend it's 35 degrees.
The people are wearing coats and carrying bags and knapsacks.
We had over 1,500 extras or background actors. Not one quit. Not one complained. A lot of them were the original march. And, you know, that day on that bridge, Wendell Pierce is looking over the bridge. And all of us had our moments in the movie. But after filming Bloody Sunday, which we did in 2 days, which was very quick, Wendell's looking and there's a tear going down his cheek. And I asked him later on, and he basically told us later on in an interview that he was looking down at the Alabama River and imagining all the lost souls that died that never got credit, never had a voice because they were black. They just wanted to be treated equal. And he said, today we gave them a voice.
How will the movie Selma help to take America forward in the aftermath of current events? This movie has people's attention. So there's an opportunity here. How do you take advantage of that?
Well, you know, of course, a lot of people are going to be bigoted, and they're still going to have their opinions. But my father, who's 79 years old, grew up in the South. Of course, he grew up with some biases. But he walked out a changed man. It raised questions in his mind. And he basically said, I'm pure ashamed of myself for what these people – we actually portray what they went through. And it makes people think. And they come out better people after seeing the movie, I think.
And for you, having been a part of something like this, you'll have other roles. You already do. You've got them lined up. But can there ever be anything as meaningful as this movie, as your part, an integral part in Selma?
Never. I mean, I've made new brothers and sisters. Being able to let my kids be exposed to such celebrities as Oprah. You know, my son Mac, who is 5. Martin Luther King, instead of Spider-Man, Martin Luther King's his hero now. He reenacts the march. He tells Sheriff Clark, we don't want any trouble. You know, and he's playing Dr. King. 5-year-old white kid from South Alabama doing that. That's what I'm most proud of. If I can have a positive influence on someone, if I never act in another film again, I can always tell my kids and grandkids that I was a part of Selma.
My guest has been star and actor Stan Houston, who plays Sheriff Jim Clark in the movie Selma. Stan Houston, it's been a pleasure having you here. Thanks so much for coming to Pittsburgh. Sorry about the weather, but hopefully you can make it back up here in the future.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll be back hopefully soon. Yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. If you missed any portion of the program, you can revisit it and past segments at our website, WESA.FM, or as a podcast in iTunes. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.